If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And here we are, 1 week closer to rugby resuming in the Northern Hemisphere, rugby continuing in the Southern Hemisphere, and lots of stories in between. I'm Tim. I've taken my TMO shipping container to Kent at the moment and been attacked by an army of flying ants. Have they been a problem in Manchester this weekend?
Don't know. Maybe.
I saw one, so not a problem, but I was had an awareness of a flying ant in Manchester this weekend.
They were ridiculous.
Well, you've not been in Manchester this weekend, Phil.
Well, I have. I'm in Manchester right now.
Oh, yes, true.
JB and I have also done some travelling this weekend.
Ooh! Anything rugby-related? I presume not.
Well, sadly, it made us miss the Super Rugby Otteria live because we were doing maybe some rugby-related stuff, but nice visit to North Wales.
Yeah.
Lovely.
We've got a 20-kilometre walk in and some beers by the beach because obviously no one in Wales is open yet.
Beers by the beach was very good fun.
And some line-up practice. Some socially distant line-up practice.
Well, speaking of Wales, haven't they... The Welsh government are so touchy about the coronavirus thing that all scrums are banned from all rugby at all levels, which could have a massive knock-on effect for Pro 14. I believe so, as it stands.
No.
You mentioned that before. I've not actually checked.
No, that can't be a real thing.
There was something in the rugby paper today.
Was there?
But then again, there were other stories in the rugby paper today which have since been disputed. Which,
ooh, interesting.
Stories, Tim.
Which
stories.
We will talk about.
I love the rugby paper.
I also just want to say thank you, Phil, for having hair more in need of a cut than mine, because I've been feeling... Do you know that when it gets so bad, you feel awkward? That's where I'm at the minute. Yeah. I can't get one until the 22nd of July.
Do you know what?
But I've just looked at Phil and feel a whole lot better.
Do you know what I was doing with my hair when it was absolutely atrocious? Slicking it back like American Psycho. Very satisfying.
That's a film I've not seen in ages. That's a great, top movie.
Yeah.
The business card scene alone is immense.
Yeah. Well, indeed, I got my brand new beard more and co cards done this week. So not only did I have the original haircut, I also have the original business card scene.
I love it. Right, well, go on, Phil.
I was going to say, my hair is looking more and more like Stuart Barnes's in the Clash of the Codes game. It's more and more like that every single week. Although it's...
Can I have Stuart Barnes, please?
It's not quite as grey as Stuart Barnes's was then, albeit I am now older than Stuart Barnes was then. Which is
really
a little bit depressing.
Your hair looks like, bearing in mind you're the brother of a member of parliament, your hair actually looks like it should be on top of the head of a member of parliament.
Well, I mean, he looks like Nicola Sturgeon.
Or like a brunette Michael Fabricant.
Well, talking of ages of people, Phil just mentioned the age of him, but Stuart Barnes. I had a few weird ones just today, actually. First of all, I assumed Owen Williams was still 21 or something. Owen Williams is 28. Do you all know that?
Owen Williams, who's just gone to Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He read the 28-year-old fly-off. Like, what? I thought he was 12 or something.
Reality, ooh, reality hits you hard, bro.
Oh, well, get this one. Brooklyn Beckham is 21. When did that happen? He's just got engaged.
I'm glad you're keeping up to date with celebrity gossip, JB.
Well, yeah. I thought Brooklyn Beckham was 9 or something.
So here's the story. This will kick us off. Here's the story that's been refuted that was published in the rugby paper this weekend. So the story goes, as reported, that, and it's the front page story, in fact, the very reputable rugby paper, Manu Tuilagi called up Leicester, basically with a begging bowl, going, please, can I come after all? Can I have the deal that you offered and I turned down? The headline, Rebel Manu begs for his Tigers job back. Since that
I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, since that headline, Freddie Tuilagi, the boss, the agent of Global Bro Sports. greatest name company. Although, no, there was a greater name company in rugby that's gone bust. The greatest company in the world.
Greatest ever sports company.
Greatest ever sports company, or whatever it was called.
Rugby Company Limited.
Exactly.
Which was the Southern Kings company.
Quite. So Freddie Tuilagi says, and here's his tweet. Yes, I can confirm Manu had a conversation with one of the club officials on Friday night as a matter of courtesy to return his call. So please reveal your source from Leicester Tigers, because I've got the recordings of the phone conversation, or Manu is going to sue your ass.
Wow. Wowza. Why are we suing? I mean, what damage has been done?
It's inaccurate reporting. It's not this. There's not what is it, defamation by saying he was begging Leicester Tigers for his job? I don't think it's defamation.
He felt uncomfortable.
He might make them retract it and print a retraction and.
I love it when people say, I'm going to sue, or you shouldn't say that, or you'll get sued. I just think, go on then. Let's just see you go through all the expense of bringing some sort of civil case about something which I said. Off you go.
But it does suggest that Manu Tuilagi was not begging for his job back. Someone either got their wires crossed or printed a falsehood or reported a falsehood to someone. Always goes to show, get your second or third sources, otherwise don't print it. But interesting, and the other element, which I think the Telegraph today were saying what has been rumoured and we were talking about last week, Manu Tuilagi to Sale.
What?
Yeah.
What a signing for the neutrals that'll be.
It'd be a hell of a signing for Sale. It might actually be a very good fit for Manu, because with Sale do have some pretty handy options in the centres at the moment.
Yeah, he's Manu, not starting ahead of Sam James, I can guarantee you that.
Well, he would at least be able to manage his game time a little bit better than he might at other clubs, and certainly other clubs who are going to be paying him, let's just say, 300, 400k in that region.
I don't know the ins and outs of this. Okay, I honestly don't. I think the Sale move stacked up on a rugby basis and a salary cap basis alone. I have no further information than that, which is why I said, wouldn't surprise me. And also tying in the fact that they're like I said last week, they've got two guys in charge at Sale who can do deals. They know they know the price of fish. They know how to get a deal done, and they will do it. Would not surprise me one bit if this deal is something like, we will sign you till the end of the season. Let's go and win. Let's go and win the Premiership, and then you can go and get a real deal somewhere else. Or there's an option. So that kind of thing.
But you'd think from Manu's perspective that he'd want to be staying in England longer term than that. As in,
he's not going to be doing a 2 month deal. He's not going to be doing a 2 month deal to Sale, is he?
I wouldn't have thought. Well, it's possible, but
it depends, doesn't it? I mean, if you want to get this deal over the line, you might say to them, look, let's give us the next 2 months now. We'll pay you well. And then after that, we'll give you an option. You can stay here for this money, or you can look elsewhere. I'd do it.
Possible. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I'm Manu, I'd want to do that.
Why? You've got an option.
Well, depends what money's on the table, but why not just give me the full thing?
Because I would say it's not a good time to look for a deal in full-blown coronavirus now.
Maybe.
Get some more game tape, and then when it's all blown...
Manu, game tape? What are you talking about? Tape. What game tape game do you need tape. From Manu?
Win a premiership.
But what do you need from him that you don't know already? Like, you know, destroying New Zealand in a World Cup semi-final. Oh no, I want to see how you play against Worcester away.
On a Wednesday night.
Fair enough. I would say, look, get some more recent performances, get fit, show what you can do. A fully firing Manu, who's just come off a Premiership final, which he's probably won, would be more valuable to the French market than if he's been sat at home. That's what I would say.
So I don't think the French market doesn't stack up, but I do agree with you on the now is not necessarily the best time to sign a long-term deal because of COVID considerations. In 12 months, you might even take a one-year deal because in 12 months' time, the landscape might look very different financially. Now, it might be either way. It could look significantly worse in 12 months' time.
There is one element here
which Phil has brought up before, which I think is worthy of bringing up again. And I'm just going to do it by way of quoting Steve Diamond. Were this deal to go through and Manu to go to Sale Sharks? This was Steve Diamond only a month ago. Quote, pay cuts are a matter of survival rather than opportunism. Andy said, there were some difficult conversations, but they have all agreed, which is huge for the club going forward. Going forward, it will be one in, one out. So if a player retires or wants to leave, we will replace him with a player of similar or better quality. Manu Tuilagi does not fit into that.
Well, Bryn Evans has left the club.
Bryn Evans has left. Oh, Manu's going to play lock. Awesome.
I would say...
good in scrums.
It's one of those things which is, it's just necessity. I mean, it's nice to have a plan, and I have no doubt that they want to stick to that plan in 99% of cases. But Manu Tuilagi is on the market, and that's just not, you know, that's not your everyday kind of thing. So, you know, I do believe them when they say that. I do believe them because they kind of stick to their structures fairly rigorously. But when there is talent to be got and a deal to be done, they've done it in the past, they'll do it again.
I don't disagree, and I'm not saying were I not in charge, I would try and snap him up if he was available, because he's a rarity in terms of his skill set. He's a rarity in terms of when you can actually get access to that unique set of skills. And they can probably do it at a cut price deal and hope that he goes and sues Leicester Tiger for the remaining money, as we've talked about previously. I just thought it was worthy of bringing up again what Phil has pointed out, that if what Steve Diamond said to his players is the same as he said to the press, he said, this has to happen, because otherwise, this isn't us taking advantage of an opportunity to try and trim the money we're paying you. This, we have to do it for survival, and this is our squad, and it's one in, one out. Oh, except for when we can go and sign Manu Tuilagi.
Yeah,
except for that. And they have let go a lot of lads who, you know, they're not first teamers, and a lot of teams have done this. They let go, by the way, these are niche names, but like people like Joe Jones, Dolly, you know, loads, you know, good sort of academy lads more, but they have still gone. So, to bring someone else in is difficult, but it is opportunity, and it's also professional sport. You know, it is a brutal industry.
It is brutal, and it does. I referring to the point I made last week, it kind of, the actions have discredited other things they've said, like that, and like when Sale said every single person, not just players, but every single person in Sale Sharks has taken a pay cut, but then you contradict that by signing Manu Tuilagi and speculating to build a new stadium. Like, it does...
Hang on. Let's not talk about the stadium. You've got a vested interest in in the stadium, Phil.
I'm merely stating facts, JB.
Once again, Phil tries to discredit the stadium.
Merely stating facts. But anyway, I would do the same. If I was a Premiership club and I had money in my budget, I would probably be doing the same because Manu is an exceptional talent if you can get him fit and firing. It does that. The point that you just mentioned though, JB, about Sale dropped 8 to 10 kind of academy and squad players in the last few weeks, and Sale are not alone in that.
No.
Numerous clubs have done similar things. Some clubs have dropped more than just academy players. Gloucester, for example, have dropped a load of first choice first teamers.
Mostly second rows.
A load of South African second rows.
Don't get rid of your second rows. It's unbelievable.
But now we have the first four rounds of the fixture schedule has been announced for August, returning, I think, 15th, 16th of August, that weekend. And there are four games in 3 weeks, including midweek games around the 25th, 26th. And so the strength in depth of your squad and the strength of your academy and the strength of your backup guys or even your third choice guys in the coming months is going to be very, very important for the run into the title.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have to make guesses as to who's playing who. I mean, I think after the first round of games, you can look at the team that just played and say, well, what team can we play? And then speculate as to the team that you might be facing in terms of personnel. Because you're not going to play, you know, if Harlequins come out against Sale in a few weeks' time with a full-strength team, you would expect Harlequins for their next game to have to rotate. And same with Sale. And then you can start making educated guesses as to what you do with this squad.
Yeah, but there's also, in terms of that, it is going to throw up some bad fixtures because, I mean, there's 5 or 6 teams who really care at the moment. And there's 6 or 7 teams who this whole thing is just a sham and it's irrelevant for them.
Yeah, I think there's definitely 3 teams taking the Premiership seriously when they restart.
Exeter, Sale, Bristol.
I don't know, maybe Northampton, to be fair.
Northampton, and then the next two, I'm still not sure about the next two. So Wasps and Bath are the next two in the league table. But
Wasps, Bath, Harlequins.
Yeah, Harlequins are in 7th. But
Bath will have something to say.
Maybe.
Strong squad. And I don't think they've lost anyone yet.
They've now got Wigglesworth.
Francois Lowe's gone.
He retired, hasn't he?
Francois Lowe's gone, but that's the strongest.
No, not until the end of the season, surely.
I think he's gone now.
I think he might have gone now.
I could be wrong. Could
yeah,
be
wrong but maybe wrong on that.
No
but they've
way
got,
Francois Lowe is.
They've got Wigglesworth. Garvey's gone as well. He's gone to Gloucester.
Sorry, who's got Wigglesworth?
Bath.
They got Spencer.
Spencer. Okay. I knew it. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, Spencer. I've seen Spencer's training. Yeah, and he looks pretty good in his kit.
Well, that Bath kit's classic, isn't it?
It is. Nice.
But
it
just
is
again, nice. just to loop.
Yeah, Francois Lowe. Francois Lowe has gone now.
Okay.
Cool. No way. Oh.
Just to loop back on something we said last week. I just think it almost cements a lot of the things we said last week. This Manu Tuilagi situation and how that might be construed as mixed messages, but then how you might have to take advantage of it is one thing. Also, Exeter this weekend have come out and said that they have extended the contracts of 30 players. So effectively, they have retained, refreshed, renewed and extended their core squad, basically the bulk of their first team squad. And just to highlight that the unintended consequence of the way that Premier Rugby or Premiership Rugby or the Premiership clubs organise their affairs, Exeter Chiefs will be working on the $5 million salary cap for the next season. And they will have to keep all their players underneath the $5 million. Sale, who did exactly the same as Exeter have done, and there may be other clubs, I don't know, but just happened to have done it before June the 18th, can spend $6.5 million on their players under the salary cap, which is farcical.
Hang on a minute, Tim. Hang on a minute. Did you say redone or extended?
Extended. So they're new contracts.
Actually, those deals might still be valid. So that it will be, if they're extended, it'll be extended on the original money. Does that make sense? On the original contract. So, maybe they're discounted anyway.
Possibly. I thought it was those who signed the, whatever it is, the amended contract terms before the 18th of June.
What I mean, JB, is if, it may well be the case, but say, for example, a player's contract was going to run out in next June, let's say.
Yeah.
So say Tommy Francis had 1 year left. He signed a new deal. Tommy Francis had a deal that ran till next June. 25% of that this first season would be discounted from the salary cap. But if he signed but beyond that, it would be up to the full amount.
Yes, yes.
So it's more for the long-term planning. Okay, this will more the case next season, but next season it could be the case that Exeter will spend 5 million, will be under the 5 million salary cap, but only by spending 5 million or a chunk more. Or as the years goes on, it will be more and more the case. Whereas Sale right now can spend 6.5 million and be underneath the 5 million cap.
Well, Wasps got their deals done very early doors. Did you notice that? Just smart planning, I guess.
It's smart planning. I'm not knocking it, and I'm not making it's only because Sale publicly said I'm not picking on Sale. I'm not saying they did anything wrong. I'm just saying it seems slightly farcical. That
it's from a regulation. It's from a regulations point of view. The clubs. You'd be silly not to try and take advantage of it once that regulation is put in place.
It's one of those things.
And actually, we don't know Exeter. They might have taken advantage of it. They might have just waited for several weeks to announce it. Because this is just the announcement of conclusions. Like, they might have done all of their England guys, they might have signed them up a month and a half ago that regulation was first announced, but they're only announcing it once the full squad is signed up.
Yeah. True.
So they might have taken advantage of it in the same way.
The amazing thing about this will be, say if they have traded away length for money now. Okay, so value now, as in pounds and pence now, but they'll add another couple of years onto your contract. So you can keep a guy like, I don't know, Jack Noll. Yeah, so Jack Noll gets a longer yet less attractive contract. I wonder how that'll make those teams look in 3 years' time when players inevitably start to decline, or you've got something that doesn't fit your scheme, or you want to change your management who wants a new type of player, all those sort of things. I wonder if these teams are actually, it's good now, but there's a bit of a ticking time bomb going on.
Yeah, it's teams have had to make short-term decisions on the long-term structure of their squad.
Yeah.
But they've had to do things now, which will, like you say, have unintended consequences for several years down the line. And it will affect different players in different ways. Like some players having the stability of having a 5-year deal will be brilliant for them, a 4-year deal or whatever it is. But others might get lazy, fat, overconfident, and not as hungry as they previously were. So it will affect different people in totally different ways.
Yeah.
Look forward to seeing that. Yeah, so actually, you might be better off getting rid of everybody now, much like Leicester Tigers have done, and then having a load of cap flexibility for when everything goes, turns into a mess.
Particularly as I think the market value of players is, if it was a stock market graph, it would look horrendous. Your financial, like JB and other financial advisors would be crying as they call up their clients to give them the bad news. Because there was one, I forget which club meant... who said it, but in the rugby paper again, there was someone speculating, and they were obviously they're in a position where they would know, saying that the market value of players that are currently on about £300,000 is more likely to be around the 120 mark.
Yeah, they're probably not wrong. That said, depends who you are, because it feels to me that there is a very buoyant market for some players, and clubs are looking at ways. So on one hand, they're saying, look, we're losing £1 million a month, which is the figure from some clubs, is £1 million a month loss now.
Yeah.
On one hand, they're saying that, and then on the other hand, they're saying, look, we've re-signed everyone. So it does seem that there's an appetite for players still, and particularly the big names, they're still getting contracts. So I don't think we'll really know what the market value for players are until rugby kicks off again, and all these contracts come up for discussion.
So one of the things that I've observed outside of rugby in terms of COVID-19 is it has accelerated trends that were already taking place. So yes, two good examples would be the trend of people working from home and like remote working type stuff. That has hugely been accelerated. And another one is the death of the high street. Hugely accelerated.
But like you say, a lot of the companies that have said, oh, we're shutting down stores, we're offloading loads of stuff, they were in bad shape beforehand.
It's accelerated the trend. Yeah. So yeah. It was already going that way.
That was the destination. It just got it there a bit quicker.
And one of the trends that was mentioned by us, but also mentioned by Charlie Morgan in a very good article a while ago in Rugby, was the squeezed middle. And that was the top players who do unique things, who there are only a handful of people in the world that can do what they do. They are still commanding big salaries, and in fact, bigger salaries. But everyone else, the players who were previously on 300K might have been on 200K and people on 250 and now on 100. That's probably just accelerated that trend and dropped everyone. The top stars, Beauden Barrett, everyone will want a Beauden Barrett, a Manu Tuilagi, a Damian McKenzie. But your generic second row, back row, wing, they're going to be worth a lot less.
Yeah. We need to see what the game looks like once the crowds have returned.
But picking up on what you said about Gloucester, Grobler and Moster, two South African second rows going, I think there's a position that, yes, I know they're unique men in just the size and shape of second rows makes them rarer. However, a lot of the work they do is less sort of skill based, and a lot of the work they do is just fitness and physicality based, which are things you can pluck from the Championship, say, and get someone that does a reasonable job on no money at all. And when you're money balling it, do I want to spend £350K on Franco Moster or whatever he was on? I don't know. I'm speculating. Mm-hmm. Or do I want to get a 70K Championship mute?
Yeah, there's plenty of them.
There's plenty of them. A front five from the Championship, and I've got 250K I can spread around just upskilling other areas of the team. And I think that's what the money ball situation is going to come into effect a little bit more. I think, for example, second rows is one where people will cut costs big time.
Do you know what I would do, Tim? I'd do neither of those things. I'd go and spend 900K on Adam Coleman.
Bargain.
I'd invest the money for 3 Matt Moss starts and go get Adam Coleman. That's what I'd do.
Just mind-boggling, isn't it?
You are right. Because, you know, it's an effort job, second row. There again, crikey. To find someone who can do the work that Moss start in particular does, he's just a machine.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to play down what he does.
Yeah.
World Cup winner, for goodness sake.
I wonder what they're going to do, though. I mean, in their current squad now, who is there that steps up?
James Craig, or is it James Craig or Alex Craig? I can't remember his name. Or is it? No, he's at Northampton. No, hold on. Then maybe, who knows, Freddie, what's his face? Clark steps up into the lock.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I honestly don't know.
Maybe they've got some ballers in their academy that they'll bring through.
I sincerely hope that is the case. It'd be great to see two enormous local Gloucester locks tearing it up, but I just don't see it.
So they've still got Ed Slater. They've just announced today or yesterday, Matt Garvey is coming in, who can row, second row. And it is Alex Craig, who's the Northampton lock. But other than that, like Freddie Clark has played there occasionally, but he's not an out-and-out second row. So who knows what they're going to be doing?
Yeah.
Well, so we've even before the coronavirus, as you said, Phil, this has accelerated a lot of things, and the RFU were making job cuts over the last couple of years because they've overspent on the redevelopment of Twickenham and have found themselves with a little bit of a black hole to fill. And 139, count them, 139 staff, which is about a third of all staff that work for the RFU. Yeah.
About a quarter. It's huge, huge numbers.
Yeah, between a quarter and a third of all staff now don't have a job.
Yeah, well, it's awful, isn't it? is awful. Because like,
when you say that, you realise the human cost of it. That's people who have mortgages and kids and all the rest of it, and a big chunk of it you think was avoidable. Some of it wasn't avoidable. A chunk of it was.
I think were avoidable. And one of the things I would say is like, I've got to have to be very careful how I phrase this because it is awful. I just don't. Well, okay, let's say something else first. But firstly, there are a lot of people in the RFU who will leave, and they'll be able to get jobs elsewhere, which is great. Or at least I hope they will. If you're a press officer, or you know, your skills are immediately transferable. People I really worry about are the people that join the RFU, you know, like as a community coach or community liaison. Now, I'm sure they do have a lot of good, they're good people who've got a lot of transferable skills. But it's not obvious to me where you go if you were a professional rugby coach for 5 years, because that's effectively what they were. And that's a real shame, because they're proper rugby people. They've been invested in the game, literally invested themselves in the game for God knows how many years. Now they're going to find themselves looking for a new role. So that's very, 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 very disconcerting.
Do we know if that's where a chunk of the savings? Because if it is the community coaches, the people that go out and support coach development in clubs, go out and promote the game in schools, if the axe has fallen on those, that will be awful. That's the worst move you can do.
Well, it'll have to, I guess. I mean, if you get rid of a quarter of your staff, it's got to come from somewhere.
We want to grow the game.
The other thing I'll talk about though is, you know, the RFU, they obviously couldn't predict coronavirus, but I do wonder, like, they should have built something on a more sustainable footing. I mean, when you hit a hiccup, you've got to get rid of one quarter of your staff. And it's not a business, right? It's not a business in the sense it makes something and there's a demand for a product. It's a custodian of a bloody game. It's got a monopoly over a game. You know, it isn't a traditional business. It should be in a better situation than it finds itself.
It doesn't have shareholders to answer to that want increased profits every year, is it? It's an organized, so it could sit on a huge, it could have a big vault underneath Twickenham and just keep a load of gold bullions in there.
Absolutely, it could have basically a rugby sovereign wealth fund. It could do all sorts. And the other thing as well is like, did it overstretch itself when it decided to have so many community coaches or so many press officers, or you know, was it built on an unsustainable footing? And you've got to say right now, the answer sounds like yes, it was.
It does look like that with a global pandemic and a subsequent recession. It's not in a good position at all. With all of their, well, we still don't know what the next opportunity for England to have, England, the RFU, to have significant revenues is going to be. Because we still don't know what the autumn international, the test window, what it might look like, or even what next year's Six Nations might look like.
Well, at this point, I'd put out a little plea to all of the stakeholders in the game. Think long term. I understand you need to think short term and make immediate decisions, but I just feel like people are trying to take fish out of a pond that is slowly drying up, rather than going, let's build a little canal network that means, I'm crossing metaphors, but you get my point.
Carol, I'm enjoying this.
but basically there's an ever decreasing circle, and they're sort of trying to defend that pond that's drying up, rather than looking at other water sources around. And I just worry that, like, say, for example, the RFU will go, we need to cut our cloth, so we'll cut down on community coaches. The knock-on effect of that will be there'll be less people from schools getting into rugby, which means 10, 15 years down the line, the player pool is much smaller. The local clubs don't have the subs to support, and the people paying in the bar to support the club making money. Nice one. Just getting some food dropped off. Thank you.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, perfect. Lovely. Look at that. Look at that service. You get my point. But then the clubs are also going, we want our premiership money now, but they're not thinking, or the unions are thinking, we want our international ticket money now, but what's world rugby going to look like in 10 years' time if only two teams can win the World Cup, for example?
I mean, I would say that the onus now is on people in clubs, much like myself, much like anyone else who goes to a club every week. Just do your bit. Just do your bit. If that means holding the tackle back, do that. If that means coaching the end of eights or whatever it is, do that. You know, that's what we're going to need. We're going to need people and volunteers who will fill the gap left by what, you know, from whatever the RFU leaves. So, yeah, and I'm not actually adverse to that. I mean, if you can't be bothered going down your club to do something, maybe you don't deserve a club.
Yeah, it's, I really see Tim's point about the...
Yeah, I do as well, completely.
The community coaches, and you're taking that layer of introduction of the game to people, and people who might not have a local club, or certainly not one that's in walking distance or easy commuting distance, and they get no other opportunity to experience the game.
I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that the RFU, fair play, so there's a lot of things that the RFU do which annoy me.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
What things that the community coaches do and say that annoy me, like the eternal positivity about learning environments and nonsense like that, which really annoy me. One thing that they did do is they started up a rugby club in Withenshaw. Now, from what I know about the Withenshaw Rugby Club, I mean, if you know Manchester, you'll know that Withenshaw is not the most aspirational place.
It's where the royal family was set. People will understand that. The royal family was set in Withenshaw, yeah.
Was it? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right, but yeah, they actually set up a Withenshaw team, which I think is absolutely amazing. I played against them.
Yeah, Tim and I played against them.
Oh yeah, of course we all did.
But well, yeah, no, that's you weren't there. We played a Friday night game that you weren't there at, weren't you?
No, I played.
Phil scored six tries, I think.
Did I play?
I think it was just five.
Oh, but... it was only five. Sorry.
I've definitely played with him.
Oh, did you? Yeah, sorry, you did. It was the Sale FC game you didn't play.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, maybe volunteers can do that, but it does help a governing body that's willing to put in a coach and the resources and even things like supplying the balls and whatnot.
Well, yeah. Do you know what, JB? I'm going to give you a bit of credit there, because as you were saying about volunteers, you know what, I care deeply about rugby. It's given me a hell of a lot. I was the first person in my family ever to play. I rocked up at Newbury Rugby Club age five, and I've got so much from the sport, so many friends from the sport, so many brilliant experiences. And yeah, if times are hard and I should probably step up a little bit. I should give up a little bit of my time, because that's what, at times like this, if we actually care and we think the game's, we really believe that the game has a positive role to play for kids and whatever, and adults, then yeah, I probably should do a little something. And I don't. You coach at Didsbury. I don't.
I'm not interested in kids, for the record. couldn't care less about the junior section. But I certainly put in a lot of effort for the things I care about.
Yeah. So I think people should listen to that and let's all muck in if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a nice, sensible way to leave that subject.
Yeah. Where next? So you watched, I'm going to confess, I haven't watched any rugby this weekend. I've, as I say, the TMO Shipping Containers in Kent, that's where my sister lives, and we for the first time got the family back together. So it's been a real big family weekend. So I've not watched any rugby. I've got it recorded, ready to go as soon as I get home.
Well, that'll be useful for the podcast that comes out on Monday. So, yes, of course, it was the return of Super Rugby Aotearoa and also its Australian counterpart. Now, there is a very good reason that farmers decide that they don't name their cattle or get close to them. And I wish I would have taken this advice, because I am irrationally annoyed that the Blues lost. Irrationally annoyed. I can't believe they did. I mean, I can believe it. I think I've actually predicted it. I don't, what was my prediction?
Yeah, we all predicted the Crusaders would win.
I thought Jay, you predicted the Blues.
Definitely did.
I think we all went for Crusaders. By the way, I think the big success story for the weekend, this bit I am aware of, fully aware of, we should congratulate Warren Gatland on not losing this weekend.
Yeah, mate. Amazing. You did great.
Wonderful, Warren.
There you go. Just don't play, can't lose.
Yeah. Perfect scenario. Oh, well, the Blues, they threw it away. Have you seen the game, Phil?
I've seen the highlights rather than the full game.
Oh, so effectively, the Blues were doing everything right. It was all the Blues. After last week, when I said, goodness me, the Crusaders are smart. Their line-out work is so smart. And actually, it is smart. You know, they came this week with a totally different line-out setup to the one which I've seen previously. They were doing different things. But the Blues basically had them in almost every area. They were turning over lineouts. They were playing the sort of rugby which just applies pressure. They're making good decisions, and they got an early try. Where they lost it, and it was so obvious to me because I was watching it. I was watching it with the benefit of knowing what the score was, but for me, when they lost it, it was about 13 minutes in. 13 to 20 minutes in, and the reason I say that is because they were so on top. They score their try. Mark Tlaire, who is an absolute weapon, scampers down the wing, and then they commit their first real error. And from that error, you see Canterbury getting in the game. And Canterbury mess everything up. Like, they miss their kicks, they don't score the try, they don't score their try, so on and so forth. And because of that, you expect then the Blues to take advantage and then put on more points, because you know for a fact that if the Blues did that, if the Blues started missing their kicks and messing up, you know, try scoring opportunities, Canterbury would punish them. And they just didn't. And it's because he didn't take his chances then there's two turning points. There was that. And then a little later on, the Blues have got their tails up. And they kind of get a bit lazy. They start playing a faster sort of pace rugby. Because they're not lazy, they're comfortable. But they inadvertently go away from what they were doing, which is playing good rugby with solid decisions, kicking the ball and making sure they can apply pressure, to a game which suits Canterbury down to the ground. Because what the Canterbury want to do, they want to play the quickest game possible. And they just let them, you know, it's just those two decisions about 13 minutes and about 60 minutes.
So to your point that if Blues had given Canterbury opportunities, Canterbury would take them, or Crusaders would take them. That's exactly right. And that plays out in the stats, because it was one penalty. So it's two tries each, of which Blues converted one, but Moonga converted both of them. But it was four penalties to one in terms of the scoring, but it was 12 penalties to six in terms of the actual penalty. So it was the Blues errors that played out that gave the winning margin. But it only actually played out from me watching the highlights in the 60th minute, because until that point the Blues were leading, and it took that Mitchell Drummond try in the 60th minute for things to start to turn, and once things had turned, the pressure just built and built and built.
Yeah, so Crusaders, back to sort of something which we were talking about last week, doing a sports psychology thing. I'm sure there's something in the Crusaders. They must talk about this, but when it's time to go, it's time to go. So they kind of look like I think Saracens do this too, which is you can look at the large periods of the game and think that's average. I mean, they're good, but they're not great. They're not, you know, lighting up. And then they get close, or they get into a situation which they fancy. It's a different gear, and you see them going through the gears in the first half. And the Blues successfully stop it and think, right, okay, now you've got to score your points, because if you don't take advantage of this, when they come again, they will score. But yeah, there must be some sort of sports psychology behind how they get the team to all switch on at that point, because it does happen.
And the winning try, what was the final try of the game that sealed it for Crusaders? I loved watching that. So again, watching that, knowing the score and knowing the scorer. So I'm watching Will Jordan, who's been on fire this year. Yeah. Young lad, 21, 22-year-old winger, who's dropped to the bench this weekend for not a bad All Black back three of Severi Rees, George Bridge and David Havili.
Love Bridge.
So Will Jordan gets dropped to the bench. But then you just see him, like he's on the blindside wing, ball comes to him, he ends up clearing a ruck, and then the ball works its way back the other side, and you can just see him following the ball, pick the time to make the run, picks the line, try time. It's a superb bit of play, but both
it is,
Crusaders, but from him as an individual, as a very young man, to have that awareness and pick that line is really, really good.
Yeah, I've got a whinge as well, a real moan. Beauden Barrett is just a guy. Beauden Barrett at 15, I know you're going to say he's one of the best players in the world. Maybe you're right. But he, at 15, he is literally just a bloke which are pulled off the street. You could get any mid-range fly half to stand at fullback, catch the ball and kick it back. Yeah, it's not. He's not a world-class fullback. He's one of the best players in the world at 10. Are we seriously saying that Ottier Black couldn't stand with 15 on his back, catch the ball and kick it back? Is that what we're saying? And that Ottier Black is better at 10 than Beauden Barrett? This is a world of madness. Madness. He needs to play 10.
Well, potentially, do you think that, because I've seen some highlights, do you think, and Richie Mwanga looks like a bit of a wizard, do you think he's playing that well at 10 that's why Beauden Barrett is at 15? It's come from top. It's come from the top.
Yeah, it may well be that. It may well be that. But I don't really care. I want the Blues to win. So, even if it's coming from the top, right, you're getting the best player in the world, right, as defined by back-to-back World Player of the Year and multiple wins in
Egg Chaser tie holder.
Egg Chaser tie owner, right? And you're putting him at 15. And unless he is... I don't think he's the best 15 in the world. Not by a long shot, but well, he's the best 10 in the world.
He might not be the best 15. He might not be the best 15 in the Barrett family, with the way that Jordy Barrett is currently playing.
Exactly the same way that Billy Vunipola isn't the best 8 in the Vunipola. Not immediate family, the wider family, Tulipe Falatowers. It's exactly the same principle. That annoys me somewhat. He needs to play at 10. You would say, wouldn't you, that maybe the guy's playing... who's the guy playing 15 for the Crusaders?
Havili was playing 15.
I mean, he looks like just as good a fullback as Barrett.
I love Havili. I think he's...
why not?
I think he's massively underrated. I think he's absolutely class.
Yeah, it's just frustrating to say. I don't buy the two playmaker things. I do buy the two playmaker things. If one of the playmakers happens to be a world-class 15, first and foremost, that can also be a playmaker. Not a fullback, not a fly half at fullback.
You're just upset because your beloved.
Do you know, is this ridiculous fetish that people have? But everyone has to have skills. It's got to be skills first and foremost. No, doing your job first and foremost is the most important thing. And then you can worry about hookers kicking.
Well, after you can bemoan your beloved Blues losing, and I can celebrate my beloved Hurricanes winning again.
Yeah.
Another good win.
And also Egg Chasers Derby, massive win over Tim's Highlanders. Tim, you must be devastated.
The Landers. I don't know, my beloved Highlanders. I know. I couldn't watch the game. I know I know very little about it, but I know that I'm deep
it hurts your
inside.
Soul.
It's the pain. It was I almost had to call off the little family day we had today as a result.
There's no pain like it, is there, Tim? Your team losing in Super Rugby Artaria, there's nothing like it.
Can I say I was thinking about this during this last few months. I was thinking, there's a bit of me that would quite like to have a team. I don't have a team whose score I look for first because...
Yeah, like me.
Yeah, like you, JB. Because I always... my Saturdays were always taken up with playing, and my brother is the only career in the top league that I ever followed. So I would look for the Sale result or the London Irish result or whoever he was playing for at the time. I don't have a team, and I think I'd quite like a team.
I think you should do this differently, right? Because you can't just have a team. It's kind of boring. Why don't you do it, right? So you've got a favourite player. Pick a player and then follow, and then like, kind of like your brother, and then follow whichever team that player plays for.
I quite like that.
I'll give you another. That's one proposal. I'll give you another idea. Join my team to stop Sales developing the Crossford Bridge land round the corner from my house and ruining my quality of life. Join that team, Tim.
I've been retweeting Crossford Bridge or whatever it is, propaganda today. I desperately want that stadium. How are we so different, right? That we both love... If someone said to me, we're all going to build the Sale Shark Stadium in Chorlton, I would take my own spade. It would be like you digging it right. I can't convince myself why this is not a good idea. It'd be brilliant, boys.
If they're going to build it in Chorlton, I'd love that because I just could walk over one of the bridges on the Mersey. Could be there in 20 minutes.
An organisation with the kudos of sale sharks back in Sale. You're mad.
Yeah, and you're not thinking about a couple of years' time when you could take young Thomas to a game.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm thinking about when I'm trying to get out of my house and there's people parked, double parked on the road and congestion and everything's blocked up.
I've got some friends that live quite near Old Trafford and can confirm that is a massive ball ache.
Yeah, but I would
argue... Even in Chorlton and in Sale, when there's a United match, the whole thing just grinds to a halt.
Yeah, but I would argue, and you know, call me mad, I would argue there's a difference between the crowds that United get and the crowds that Sale Sharks get. Not much of a difference.
In scale, if nothing else.
Yeah, 50. United comfortably, on a regular basis, get well over 15% more people than Sale Sharks.
Marginally more than 15%.
Yeah,
more
it's 15, 20% more.
So just before you jump onto the Highlanders Hurricanes, if you were picking a New Zealand side for this coming weekend, who wears the 10 jersey based on what you've seen in the Aotearoa?
It has
so
to be Richard Mwonga, right?
Well, yes, because Beauden Barrett hasn't worn the 10 jersey in Super Rugby Aotearoa. So purely based on this, you're going for like maybe Otte Black would be second choice or Mitch Hunt would be second choice.
Well, but I mean, Beauden Barrett's won a World Cup with a 10 on his back.
And he's
won a World Cup with a 15 on his back.
Hang on, I don't think he has, Tim.
He won a World Cup with a 23 on his back, maybe?
23 on his back, yes, quite right.
Possibly.
So that's the thing about Beauden Barrett. Everyone thinks he has won a World Cup. He wasn't the starter for it. And I think the worst part about this is not only do you not make one of the best players in the world the best player in the world, you could basically strip that away from him. You also make it so that all the other chasing pack are not going to get a shot at the fly half shirt. So your starter is Richie Mwonga on form at the moment. Ottier Black's not going to get in that side because they're not going to put Ottier Black on the bench whilst Beauden Barrett is on at 15. Why would you do that? Because you just move Beauden Barrett around.
Yeah, so who would wear, if you were picking a New Zealand side for next weekend, who wears 15 then?
Geordie Barrett.
Yeah.
It's getting tough, isn't it? Because I've only seen a few highlights, haven't seen the game, but everyone seems to be raving about George Bridge.
George Bridge is class. Will Jordan is class. Martellier is class. Caleb Clark is class. David Havili is class. Like, there's so much talent
on show. Reese
is unreal. Like, the whole thing.
I do think about Talia that he might not have the top-end gas because he did make that break. I mean, he did very well to make that break. And he's in the clear and you expect him just to go and he never really hits his straps. So I'm not sure if he's quick. I'm sure I'm wrong on that. That's just on that one thing. And also, I don't know. Maybe it's not big or powerful enough. I don't know. There's something missing for me about Talia.
I like Talia.
I like him a lot.
His footwork and his ability to get over the game line, beat a defender, shimmy through, get over the game line is awesome.
Well, I actually think his biggest attribute is the fact he seems to make the right decisions. He seems to be in the right position at the right time, stealing the ball or whatnot. I think that's absolutely golden. But physically, maybe not. No, he's absolutely fine. I'm not going to say anything about that.
And will Richie Mwanga, if he were picked at 10 and he gets the chance, will he step up and deliver the type of dominant club performance for the All Blacks? Because he hasn't up until now.
He's not done it. I mean, I'm just trying to think back to the World Cup. In the important group stage game against South Africa, the champions, the World Cup champions, he performed really well. But then in the England game, not at all. Kind of went missing. So he might need more experience on the bigger stage. But he has done it in three Super Rugby tournaments back to back to back. Crusaders have just been unreal for the last 3 years.
Yeah. I did hate his post-match, though. Did you hear his post-match?
No.
How is it you're so good? We're honest. We keep ourselves honest. I don't even know what that means. I have no idea what
and that is. And I'm going to have to cut the interview short here because there's a dressing room needs sweeping.
Yeah, exactly. I've come off it, honestly.
I'll tell you one of the interesting positional debates will be, and I think it is still Dane Coles, but hooker.
Yes.
I mean,
agree.
Cody Taylor of the Crusaders is absolutely class. And
he is magnificent.
The young lad, Asafa Aumua, he's about 23.
People have been talking him up for a few years now since he was the under 20s captain and absolutely dominated.
I mean,
I've got to say.
He is so powerful. He's so explosive.
I like Cody Taylor a lot. And I also like the lineup of the Crusaders a lot. But he did actually miss a few. And that could be a huge issue if you're playing against, I don't know, South Africa.
Or England.
Or anyone, frankly. But I do love him. I think he's a brilliant player.
Yeah.
He's quite old as well, isn't he? 29. So maybe time to move on anyway.
Get Aumua in. He is class. And someone like him off the bench as well. He's just so powerful.
I tell you who is destined for a European contract and a big one at that and will be an absolute dominant force. I can never say his name, but I absolutely love watching him play. Patrick Tuipulotu.
Yeah.
He's destined to come over to Europe. I know he is.
He's now like really making the most of his talents. He's really achieving what he's always been destined to do.
He's like one of those very rare... Do you know what we were talking about? Locks that just run around and do all the hard unnoticed craft. Well, he might do the things which are unnoticed, hence we've not noticed them. But he also does some spectacular things. Some of his hitting and carrying.
Yeah.
He's just such an abrasive... He's just awesome. He's absolutely awesome.
So, once again, we can wrap that up by saying there might be some talent in New Zealand. There might have a few handy players.
They're okay. Kiwis. It's all okay in New Zealand. Now, can I tell you a little anecdote about the Australian rugby? I don't know if it reflects worse on me or Australian rugby. You can make up that decision. But I actually watched a game of Australian rugby this weekend. And it was another victory, back-to-back victories by the Reds, who beat the Waratahs. Which I thought was, marvellous going. Until I looked on Twitter a few hours later when someone informed me that the Reds had drawn. I watched the same game as last week because Sky had decided to repeat it early morning on Friday and I did not notice I am watching the same game as last week's. And I don't know if that tells you I'm very stupid or that Australian rugby is so dull and so boring that I couldn't actually decipher that this is a different game.
Well, you obviously went, oh God, I'll tell you what, this new... Australian Super Rugby format is weird. Only a 3-minute half-time break.
Yeah, Yeah, well, I only caught the back end of the second half, so I didn't watch the watch the whole thing. But we had an interesting conversation about Australian rugby in the car, actually, which was, whereas with New Zealand, we're discussing Richie Mo'unga, and then you got the best player in the world playing 15, and then you got this cavalcade of other amazing 10s all scattered all over Super Rugby Aotearoa. It looks like Australia have settled for two guys who couldn't even play 10 in the Premiership. And it's good to see them playing 10 and getting game time. But let's not pretend that they are out-and-out 10s.
Yeah, you're referring to Matt Tamua at the Rebels and James O'Connor at the Reds, who had an underwhelming 18-all draw, even after 10 minutes each way of the sudden death point. They still couldn't do it. Still couldn't get a result.
So I actually think Matt Tamua is more fly halfy than James O'Connor, who to me is a very talented player, a supremely talented player, just not fly half. I mean, you have to, it is a craft. You've got to work at it. You can't just, you know, show up there and become a fly half. He didn't play any fly half at Sale. Any.
Well, in this game, he threw three try scoring passes. Uh-huh. Albeit, one of them was an interception.
Wonderful.
One of them was a good yard forward. And it went to the TMO, and the TMO was either still asleep or totally bored and waved it through. So it got given, but it was at least a yard forward. And the other one was actually a very good pass, albeit it then took another magnificent bit of skill by the winger to set up the try.
Yeah. He is, like I say, a very talented player. I'm not having it. I'm not having that. He is the future of Australian rugby at fly half.
It is genuinely good, because I've always quite liked James O'Connor. Back to when he was like 19 or 20, playing fly half, wing, fullback, centre, all over the place for Australia when he first burst onto the scene. And it is good because I know he's had a few issues with his behaviour and all the rest of it, and his weight. He looks fast.
His hair and his breathing.
His hair and his breathing as well. Massive issues. But it is good just to see him looking good, looking lean and looking focused.
Yeah. As long as he's playing and getting time. But again, is it the best use of his talents? Is he better? I mean, maybe he wants to do that, because I know he wanted to desperately play. He came to Sale to play 10. And for whatever reason it was, he didn't end up at 10. So I wonder if he has said, I am playing 10 now, and that's why I'm coming back to the Reds. But to me, I don't know if it's the best use of his talents.
I'm surprised if that were the case. Like, Brad Thorne strikes me as a total no-nonsense DOR. Like, it doesn't strike me as... So it might be that he is the best 10 in that squad.
Yeah,
that might say more about the squad than anything else. But I can't imagine Brad Thorne would allow that, like someone to totally dictate his way of playing.
Yep, I can see that. But it depends. Depends if the ALU want him to, mind you, what the ALU up to, though. Who knows?
Yeah, God knows. ALU have got bigger things to worry about than who's going to play start 10 for the Reds.
Yeah, no, they're worried about even having a starting 10. They're worried about having a national team.
Well, do you know what we need to do? The new frontier of rugby that we need to go and support is in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Yes.
A tiny cluster of volcanic islands. Hawaii could get a major league rugby team.
If that happens, so we make the commitment right now that we're going to go and watch, because they need our support. we did say, didn't we? And right at the start of the show, you know, rugby's in a dire place with coronavirus. Support your local team. We should go and support that team.
It sounds like they've got some significant backers. I mean, Jerome Kano, Rocathoco, John Afoa are all listed as being involved.
Can I just correct you there? Right, some petitions are easier to sign than others. You know, if someone put a piece of paper in front of me and said, "Will you sign this in order to get a professional rugby team on the island of Ibiza?" I would sign that piece of paper pretty quickly. I can't imagine they needed much persuading to become a backer of Hawaiian rugby.
Well, they might be there. They'll be there on game day.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the stash? Imagine the stash.
Well, have you seen the Hawaiian team, the Hawaiian college football team stash?
No.
Best Googler, I would suggest.
Oh, did one of the top seeds play for them? One of the top draft picks?
Quite possibly. Quite possibly. I'm so disconnected from the NFL, I couldn't tell you.
Oh, he's from Hawaii. No. The quarterback that went to Miami Dolphins, I think, is from Hawaii. I don't think he was at the university.
Right.
So they've got... looks a bit like Green Bay. Green and white.
Yeah, but has it not got the rainbows on?
It has got the rainbows.
So cool.
Rainbows. So there's, yeah, rainbow shoulders and then the rainbow stripes down the legs.
Yeah, it's an amazing kit. And actually, you know, they don't need to do any of the outreach stuff. I mean, they've already got it, you know, actually in their kit. It's perfect.
So they are Hawaii Rainbow Warriors Football, University of Hawaii at Manoa. Awesome.
I'd be up for, you know, really sacrificing ourselves and supporting Hawaiian rugby.
Absolutely.
So it's the right, you know, you think about it, it's the right thing to do.
I also do really want to support rugby in Texas as well.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun too.
Yeah, it does. And it's, yeah, I mean, people in Texas have it hard. I mean, we need to support them because otherwise they might run out of oil money. You never know. Mm.
And who's going to drink, who else is going to drink all those Gilgronis in Austin?
I will just point out this. I believe I have got a tankard in the rugby dungeon somewhere from Hawaii Harlequins, which is sent to us from Hawaii as like a gift.
Wow. Oh,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, and you got something else this week, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I've got packets of Negroni sent through the post.
Mail order Negroni.
Huh?
Mail order Negroni.
So what actually is that? Because Negroni is a liquid. What are those packets?
Yeah, they are. So I can describe them as it's a brand of vermouth, which I can't remember how to say now, which would be that will delight the brand manager that sent me the packets of Negroni. I can't remember the brand, but as soon as I do remember it, I will share that with you. And it's basically the size of an old CD case, maybe a tad thicker, and then inside it you've got a bladder of some sort filled with delicious Negroni.
Oh, okay, so there is actually liquid in there.
Yeah.
I thought it was like almost like a powder that you had to rehydrate looking powdered at what Negroni. You sent me.
What could possibly go wrong with a bunch of drunken lads and powdered Negroni?
You can send flowers flat through in an envelope now. They can do all sorts in an envelope.
Wow.
What? Flowers in an envelope?
You can send flowers in an envelope. A flat envelope, and you open them up, and they're like a bunch of flowers. It's true.
Witchcraft.
But on this one, Jack Wakeham has got in touch with us and said that over the weekend he had his first Negroni last night, Saturday night, in fact, when he went out to a restaurant. So he saw it on the menu, inspired by us, thought, I'm going to do a Negroni. He said, "Where's JB gone? He's gone to find the brand.
He might be finding the brand, yeah."
Oh, wait, I'll tell you then, Phil. So Jack Wakeham had his first ever Negroni, inspired by us, said it was delicious. I was highly disappointed.
I totally agree. They're a unique taste. I think they're absolutely delicious. I love them.
Yeah, I feel like we've got into them in the same way that people who've been captured get Stockholm Syndrome, that kind of thing. So Hawaii Harlequins, 1964 to rugby. They are 50th anniversary of Hawaii Harlequins. There,
awesome.
Nice little tanker.
Beautiful.
And this is the brand of vermouth.
Kochi, Storeki.
Cocky or Kochi or.
Yeah, there you go. Delicious stuff. Delicious.
Superb.
Highly recommended. What was our other thing? What else have we got?
So there's a couple of little announcements from Europe or from France. So top 14 are also reducing their salary cap. They're reducing it by about 1.4 million euros next year, and there are then further reductions planned for future years. Mm-hmm. So they're following the same trend. So this, the overall trend of rugby players getting cheaper looks like it is going to continue, or certainly most rugby players getting cheaper is going to continue. And the other bit of news was that European Cup final, which was supposed to have been in Marseille, or the two finals, the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup, which was supposed to have been in Marseille in May, that has been kicked back to next year, and they're looking for a venue for it to be
this year.
And you wonder whether it'll be to October. Be confirmed. Will it be to be confirmed based on who is appearing in said final? Or
probably, well, we can assume that it's going to be in October, and it is unlikely that there will be crowds at it. So the look, you want whatever is the most convenient to get TV broadcasting for the two teams to get to.
Yeah,
that's agreed. Probably the that will be the priority, I would guess.
Mm.
But then, here's an angle which we've not spoke about yet, because everyone's talking about the league starting again. No one spoke about Europe, and if Saracens, I don't know what team they are, but if they somehow win this European Cup, this will be their greatest achievement by far.
I might be tempted to agree. I just can't see them winning it, because they've got to go to Leinster, haven't they?
Although going to Leinster without the crowd is a massive boost for Saracens.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was Leinster. Basically got the England boys plus a few others. I mean, they could do it if they catch them on an off day. That's the... Is that a semi? No, it's a quarter.
Quarter.
And then semi will be about against bloody Toulouse or someone.
Racing. Well, Ulster, mate, not Toulouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's that. I think everything's ticked off of our to-do list. Obviously, a massive story is going to drop on Monday morning that we then can't talk about. It's just the way it goes.
10 to midnight on Sunday night, a massive story will drop.
Yeah. Excellent. Right. Well, there we go. Nice pocket-sized podcast for you.
Well, I think it was a good. I'm looking at the clock. It's a good hour and a quarter.
Yeah, the length of most normal podcasts. Just a little bit longer than most normal podcasts.
Yeah, exactly.
For normal broadcasters.
Gents, have a lovely week.
Yes, enjoy Kent, and I will see you next time. And in fact, that's what we'll do. We'll say as soon as this lockdown is open, we'll drink our CD packets worth of Negronis.
Oh,
can't wait.
Yes.
Can't wait.
Oh, beautiful. You can have yours out of your Hawaii Harlequins tankard.
Absolutely. It's full of Airfix missiles at the moment. That's okay. Anyway, no one needs to know that.
just to say, if you enjoy the podcast, we don't ask for any money. However, hit subscribe. That really helps. Leave a 5-star review. That really helps. Tell your mates. That really helps. Do all of those things and let the boys play.
Always play.
Sweet. Right, I'll get busy. Nice
good
one.
Stuff. Right. See you, chaps.
Take it easy. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.